Quest for Gold, episode 33. I'm Ryan Burrow. We are 112 days away from the Summer Games in Paris. French President Emmanuel Macron inaugurated the new Olympic Aquatic Center in Paris this week. He was asked by reporters if he thought Russia would in some way target the upcoming games, and he said he had, quote, no doubt whatsoever, including in terms of information, end quote. The Kremlin has since rejected the president's comments. The French president and his government have taken a tougher stance in recent months against Russia. Russian athletes will not be competing under the nation's flag, and it will be up to the IOC to determine which Russian athletes will be allowed to compete. Some may be barred for contributing to the war in Ukraine in one shape or another. French authorities have begun moving African migrants who have been gathering outside of City Hall. They've been moved to government shelters ahead of the games. The Palestinian Olympic Committee says it plans to bring a message of peace to the world come the Paris Games. Athletes from Palestinian territories have participated in the Olympics dating back to 1996. But the group's technical director says due to the war, it has scaled back its ambitions. Alex Cooper, who hosts the most listened to podcast by women globally, has been hired on by Peacock to provide live picture-in-picture commentary during the games. She'll get exclusive access to Team USA athletes, including in soccer, gymnastics, and basketball. One of the most decorated U.S. field hockey players in the country and the current head coach at the University of North Carolina, Erin Mattson, says she's been denied an opportunity to try out for the 18-member Olympic team. That training camp is going on now. You can hear more about field hockey in our discussion with Maddie Zimmer in episode 31 of Quest for Gold. Two American women will referee at the Olympics this summer. 38-year-old Tori Penso, who was the first woman to referee a regular season MLS match in 20 years, and 40-year-old Rebecca Welch, who was the Premier League's first female referee. This week on Quest for Gold, we speak with Olympic silver medalist Courtney Frerichs. She's had a tumultuous lead up to her 2024 bid, but looks to become a three-time Olympic middle distance runner.
I'll start here. I saw on social media it's 328 miles in March. Very nice. I think I got four. So very good. What is steeplechase and middle distance running for people who don't know, like myself?
Yeah. So middle distance kind of encompasses like the 1500, 800 to 5K ish, I would say. Steeple falls in that ballpark. It's a 3000 meter race with five obstacles over the course of each lap. So 7.5 laps, four of them are regular barriers that you hurdle, and they basically look like balance beams, 30 inches high. And then the fifth one is in front of a water pit. So it's very much like the horse event that you would see.
Is that kind of the tradition of that sport, is running through a jungle or running through some kind of terrain?
Yeah. The story is that it started as a race that was from church steeple to church steeple. And so you'd be running and jumping fences and through water and various things. And then, so they sort of replicated that onto the track.
What drew you to this particular distance? Is it one of those situations where you just wanted to run, but you're not fast enough to sprint and don't want to do the long haul, or was there something that drew you specifically to that distance?
Well, I went to college thinking I would be a 5K runner on the track. I hadn't really ever found my thing in track, but really liked cross country. And I actually grew up doing gymnastics. So I started competing in gymnastics when I was 9 years old, did it all the way up until I was 18. Moving on from that sport was definitely really challenging, but the right decision and to focus on running in college. And it was actually my college coach's idea. He was super excited about this gymnastics background that I had and thought that it would make for some really good skill sets for steepling. And I mean, he was spot on. I think having spent so many years in a technique-based sport allowed me to really understand and pick up on technique pretty quickly when it came to learning how to hurdle. And, the concept of just like running at these stationary objects wasn't foreign to me. I'd been doing it for 15 years. So it came pretty natural. And I just loved it right away. I think I'd always struggled. My mind is very calculated. And so sometimes the track can be a little overwhelming in that sense, because it is, we're a very time-based sport. And so if you're constantly thinking about where the clock is every 100 meters, I mean, a lot of these big races have clocks every 100 meters, whereas in the steeplechase, you have a barrier to focus on. So you're like really not thinking about time. It's very easy to just focus on the barrier in front of you and focus on racing. So
obviously don't know a ton about the sport, and I'm just kind of getting acquainted with your past and your history. It looks like the last year has been quite transitional for you. Injury, a racing club. Kind of walk me through what this last year has been like.
Yeah, so I definitely had really high hopes coming off the, you know, 2021 Olympic year of really kind of continuing that sort of progression, and, you know, life happened, which is normal. Dealt with, you know, the death of my college coach, which was really, really challenging for both my husband and I, who is a really important person in our life. Some sickness, and then had my first kind of like major injury of my running career. And I ran through it all of 2020, or the whole outdoor track season of 2022, choosing to not image and figure out what was going on. And then it definitely kind of came to a head in the fall of 2022. And so had to get an image, realized I was going to need to have surgery. And so, you know, I kind of had a decision to make in that moment where it was like, okay, we could try to really force things and maybe the next 3 years go okay, or we try to do something about it now, knowing that 2023, that whole year could be a bit rocky, with the hope that I was setting myself up to have a healthy Olympic year. During that whole process, my previous coach took a job at the University of Oregon, which meant our entire training group was also moving. And I felt like I owed it to myself to give that a go. I'd had a lot of success with him as a coach and just a lot of history, but I think the change just wasn't quite right for my husband and I. And, you know, I think mixed with the injury, it just, it made for a really rocky year. It was tough, but, you know, I think that by the end of it all, I made the decision, like, I still want to do this. I want to pursue 2024. I don't think that this is the end for me by any means. Like, I've so much else I want to go after. But I also felt like maybe it was time for a change. And so, we packed up our house. My husband packed up our house in Oregon. We recently sold it last month, actually. And we've been splitting time between, the Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill area here in North Carolina, and then altitude locations. So we spent the first couple months of the year in Albuquerque, which was, you know, kind of a homecoming for me, very familiar having gone to school there. And then we'll head to Park City, Utah at the end of this month, kind of for the next altitude stint.
I think I read too that part of like you wanted to commit more time with your husband. It's got to be hard doing this and being all around the country. And how do you find time to commit to that relationship when you've got all of these high expectations and aspirations?
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like especially those early years in my running, we probably spent half the year apart. And, you know, thankfully he was working toward his goals in terms of becoming college coach and things like that, and had ended up spending 5 years at Portland State, as an assistant coach there. But it's been really enjoyable to have him really a part of the journey this time, and working alongside Amy and Alistair Craig, who Amy was one of my teammates. Alistair was really involved early in my career. And then, you know, Griffin knows me better than anybody. So, I think I have a pretty rock star team around me. And, you know, we look at this and it's such a short period of our lives that, we just want to be able to have both of us fully enjoy it. So
going back to the injury, was it hard to differentiate between a substantial injury and just trying to play through the pain? Do you feel mm-hmm. like you made it worse by continuing on? Like, if you would have just taken a break, do you think you would have been any better off, or mm-hmm. Was this more of a challenge to yourself to see what kind of your threshold was as far as injuries go?
I do think it was challenging to differentiate between, what is just normal part of being an elite athlete and where that line is. And what was really interesting was how much it changes once you know what's going on. I think like throughout the entire summer, because I didn't actually know what was going on, and I would have good days, I'd have bad days. I was able to sort of compartmentalize it and be, you know, it's just an ankle sprain. It's fine. Like, you've dealt with these before. And particularly too, the steeple is a really high impact event. It's normal for me to come off workouts or races feeling like, oh, this ankle is a little jammed or things are a little sore, stuff like that. That fall, once it was kind of flaring up pretty badly just from running, that's when I knew something was wrong. I wasn't training high at a high enough level at that point to justify what I was experiencing. And then, yeah, I mean, once I had the image done and there's a name for what's going on, and, you know, there was an option to just keep pushing through. And, you know, I think that's where like each individual athlete has to assess what makes sense for them. You know, had that been December of this year, I might have made a different decision. Mm-hmm. Because it would have been like, okay, I'm 6 months out from trying to qualify for the Olympic Games. Like, I don't have time to come back from surgery. But given that I knew what was at stake and the fact that, you know, I wanted to really be at my best for this year and beyond, it was like, okay, we need to do something about this now. I don't want to spend the next 3 years trying to be 90% of myself.
Sure, sure. It's a tough decision too, because I know, you know, having had knee surgeries and I'm going in for shoulder surgery, the first option is, well, let's do physical therapy. Let's see if that can do it. Let's do that. Let's do these treatments. Oh, let's do a cortisone shot. It's like, I just want to know what it is and fix it. And if it's something more serious, I can do it now. And I don't have to waste 3 months trying these things that aren't going to do anything.
100%. And so it really was a situation where I had to just take ownership of it and, you know, get as much information as I could. But also, I think I realized I needed to take the reins in this because no one else was living inside my body. And so, and thankfully, you know, I had a good team of people around me that then trusted that decision. But yeah, it's there's so many options and routes. And I just came to realize, I was like, I don't want to waste time. Like, if there's an option to try to fix this, like, we need to do this now. And, you know, I didn't want to run in pain anymore. So
what are you at right now, as far as percentage wise from where you were prior to the injury?
I'm training at 100% right now, which has been awesome. Full mileage, full volume of things. We've started, some steeple workouts already, which have been going really well. And, yeah, it's been so much better. You know, I think I have zero regrets having the surgery last year, really just addressing the issue. And then, you know, we made a push to see if I could make the world championship team last year. And to be honest, I think just given all the circumstances, it was probably a bit ambitious, but, you know, I also never wanted to be the athlete that doesn't line up because things weren't perfect. So we gave it a go, ended up actually hurting the ankle again, different injury, but was able to come back from the second one pretty quickly. And, you know, I think just really then got back to some basics this fall and just, you know, made the hard decision of accepting where I actually was versus where I wanted to be in that moment. But I think it paid off. And so, you know, like, by working on basics and just sort of building a really strong foundation, I've been able to train a lot stronger and just a lot healthier now this spring, like post this injury.
What does training look like right now? Are you ramping up and then going down? Are you just consistently running and trying to top yourself? Like, what does it look like now, you know, out ahead of the trials, ahead of the Olympics? Like, what are you focused on in this moment?
Yeah. I always think that this time of the year is the hardest, because it is, it's very high volume. You're really trying to, as they say, like, stuff the silo. And so you want to build as strong a foundation as possible, because once racing starts to come, you don't have as much time to be able to put that kind of work in, because you don't want to be so fatigued all the time. You also kind of have to make a shift in training to like lower volume, higher intensity, things like that. But you want to have a really good base to be able to afford to then spend time doing that. So then you can carry it for a really long time. So yeah, we've just been kind of on like a gradual progression basically since October when I started to work out again. And so it's been just, you know, a lot of, yeah, high volume threshold, just like getting the body used to the paces that I want to be able to race at, but doing a much larger volume of it than what I would actually race.
So are you training at a longer race length than you would actually race? Like, is that part of it? Or are you're training at the length of the race? Does that make sense?
I think so. I mean,
like, if you're trying to do a 5K, are you actually training at a 6K just so that a 5K seems easier? You know what I mean?
Not in the sense that you're going to like run a 6K at 5K distance, but in a lot of these workouts, it's, you know, if you're training to do a 5K, you might do 4 miles total of volume. Now it's going to be broken down into smaller chunks. But a lot of times, yes, you will do in the training sessions over the distance when you want to put it all together, but it's broken up into smaller pieces. And so I actually will spend a lot of the fall and winter training like a 5-10K runner to build that strength. Because I also think that those events have a similar feeling to what you feel in a steeplechase, even though it is a shorter distance, the impact compounds. And so by the time you hit that last K, it definitely feels like the end of a 5K.
Do you weight train at all? Do you swim? Is it pretty much just running?
I do a lot of strength training in addition to running. I haven't been cross training this year. I've been able to find that if I stay in that 80 to 85 mile range, I think I get the volume necessary for myself. But the gym work has become a really big piece of things, especially post injury. I think just having had to take so much time off of jumping and things like that, I just lost some of that athleticism that I came into the sport with, having been a gymnast prior. And so we've been working really hard to get that back, and it's been paying off. I've felt like I've gotten my pop back and things. So, but yeah, you know, 3 to 4 days in the gym, in addition to then the running training we're doing.
That being said, you're 31 years old, and that's by no means old, don't get me wrong, but I mean, you've been through two Olympic cycles. How has your body and your mentality changed from when you were in the Olympics in 2016? I got to believe you're a completely different racer than you were at that point.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think there was a big learning curve in those early years of how to put myself out there on the international stage and trust things and, you know, but I also could train in a different way at that point too. You know, I could do, you know, we've had to be smarter, I guess, with especially the steeplechase work that I'm doing. It's like finding that balance between doing enough and not doing too much, because I do have to recognize the fact that I am becoming an older athlete. Not that that's a bad thing. You just have to respect then the effect it has on your body. But then I'm able to do things in other parts of training that I was not able to do when I was a younger athlete, because my aerobic system is just much more developed. And I'm also able to accomplish things on the days that I'm tired that when I was younger, I probably would have been, you know, cutting the workout. And so it's, yeah, definitely a balance of things. I also think from like a mental standpoint, I truly feel almost more curiosity driven at this point than any sort of like, I have to do X. You know, I feel really lucky. I've accomplished a lot of what I want to do in this sport. And by no means do I think that means I'm done. Like, there are still goals out there, but I feel like this time I'm coming back and choosing to do this all like for the whole process of it and not just thinking it'll only be worth it if I accomplish X.
But are you working with a sports psychologist? I know that a lot of athletes are. I mean, it's part of the training, not only physical training, but mental training.
Yeah, I mean, that was a huge factor, actually, in the 2021 year. Early in my professional career, I had worked with a sports psychologist off and on, but it had never been something probably as regular as it needed to be. And it did. Things came to a head in January of 2021, and I went to my coaches and I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm so overwhelmed. Like, and it was because I was so focused on everything needing to be perfect and thinking that like a certain result was going to make me happy versus just enjoying the process of it all. And realizing that if I can show up as my best self, like whatever the result is, is. Like, that's what I needed to be proud of. And we found a sports psych. I've been working with her since February of 2021. And it's made such a big difference. And it doesn't mean it's, you know, all easy and everything's been great since then. It's one of those things that it's a constant work in progress. And a lot of it even had to come after the Olympics, because then it's so easy to think that every time you step foot on a track, you're going to have that high that you got from the Olympic Games. And you kind of forget like how hard it was and how much work you put in the process to get to that point.
So, do you feel like you put in the same work now that you put in 2016 and 2021?
Sometimes at this point, it almost feels like I'm putting in more work.
Right. Like, and it's got to be hard because you excelled. So you got into the Olympics in 2016. You won silver in 2020, 2021. Yeah. I mean, at this point, like mentally, like what is the next level? Is it trying to be reach personal goals? How do you look at 2024?
Yeah, I think it's a balance between having those goals, having performance goals, but then also just finding joy in the whole process to getting to that point. You know, I think that's something that we've really tried to get back to this year, is just enjoying running. Like I did my first steeple workout a few weeks ago, and I had so much fun, and that was huge because I hadn't felt that feeling in a long time. And so it's been getting back to that. Like, it's going to be hard, but am I enjoying getting the most out of myself? And that's the most important goal. But yeah, I certainly still have performance goals. Like, and I think it's good to have those, but not to feel like your worth is tied to that. And so it's like, you know, I look at it like I have won a national championship, like a US championship. I would love to accomplish that before my career is over. You know, I always joke, I have the best resume of second place finishes. I've finished second at a lot of races, and I'm so, so happy about that. But I'd still love to, yeah, have a big win on my resume. And so those are things that I'm working toward, and I'm putting the work in. And but yeah, just can't define yourself.
Yeah, I'm reading a book right now on you know, results driven versus growth driven, and how big of a difference that is. It really does excel. It doesn't necessarily make you run faster, but changing your mindset will mean that if you trip, you don't completely shut down, or you know,
adaptable, 100%. Because the reality is that like our brains don't remember a lot of the middle. It's like we either remember the really bad or the really good. And so, I mean, looking back on the first medal I won in 2017, it was definitely a big surprise. And training had been going really well. But looking at that year as a whole, I had a lot of struggle. But I completely forgot how hard so many parts of that year were because it resulted in this medal. And it's just funny how it was like, yeah, actually that year was so far from perfect, even though in my head it was like, but it was so great. Like, we got to replicate it. And I was like, do we actually though?
All right. Can we talk a little bit about 2016 and 2021? What different experiences those were? I mean, just like you had 2016 in Rio, which we were all scared of Zika. And then lo and behold, here comes COVID. What were the Olympic experiences like, even off the track? Like, you got to see both. You got to experience both kinds.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like 2016 was a really cool one for me because it was a goal to make it, but being there was just such a, like, still so unexpected, you know, and I feel like it was such a perfect kickstart to my professional career. And so I was able to go there and kind of be the young kid that just soaked up the whole experience. I feel like I was just a sponge, and you know, I definitely walked away like so excited and proud, but also like, oh my gosh, I have so much work to do if I want to make it on this stage. And I shut my season down there. I was done. So I just got to enjoy the experience post racing as well. My family was there. My husband and his family were there. My best friend was there. So it was really cool to take it in with my family. My college coach, who was coaching me at the time, was there. I was able to go see a day of gymnastics and go experience just what the Olympics sort of, I think everybody envisions it being like. But the one caveat was I actually didn't stay in the village in 2016. So I did miss out on that experience. The track was kind of separate from, well, I guess a lot of the venues were a bit spread out around the city. Coach, or my new professional coach at the time, had opted to have us stay in a hotel that was really close to the training venue and then closer to the competition venue. And so that was something in 2021 that I think if he would have had it his way, we still would have stayed in a hotel, but it wasn't an option. We had to stay in the village. And so that was kind of a cool experience since I had never done that. And so it was kind of ironic. And I feel like so many times I feel like so many things need to be a certain way and perfect and all this stuff. And here I am staying in the village, like sleeping less than I probably have before any other competition, because I'm in this tiny suite sharing a room with somebody, and the suite, there's six of us, and somebody's getting up at 5 or 4:30 in the morning every single morning because there were really early sessions, and going to the dining hall and so it was so different from previous experiences, but it was also so much fun. So
one thing I heard is that families weren't allowed to be there, which was a bummer, but Team USA became your family, and everyone, all the Americans would gather to go to the swimming event, or they'd go to the fencing venue, and they would be the family. And it sounded like a cool experience, actually. I know it kind of stinks that the real families weren't there, but it also sounds like at least the countries bonded, even maybe the international athletes bonded.
Yeah, I think because we were all staying in the village, for the most part, there were a select few teams that stayed outside, but I feel like we got to know the other athletes a lot better. And so we would be gathered around the TV at night watching whatever was on. And, baseball was going on at the same time as the track. And they were so interested in so many of the track events and just asking us so many questions. And they were just really intrigued by it, which was just cool to get to know all these other athletes and just get to talk to them. Like, we were getting to know the skateboarders and then, like you said, other countries as well. So that was really fun. And, but it definitely was a very, it just kind of felt like this, alternate universe in a sense, because it was just us athletes that experienced this. And so, it was a little bit wild when I got across the finish line. I'm with the flag and I'm doing this victory lap, but it's there was no one there. I was really thankful. My coaches were able to be in there.
Did they jam a camera in your face though? Right away.
We did have to do some interviews and things like that. And I feel like that whole night was just a whirlwind, because it was that happened so quickly. And then I'm being whisked off to do interviews. And then I'm taking a cool down really quick before I go to anti-doping. And then, medal ceremony and all this stuff. And it all just was such a whirlwind. And the next thing I know, I'm boarding a bus to go back to the village and I'm alone. And that was where it hit me. I was really sad that my family wasn't there to celebrate that moment right then and there. Cause I think so many, the lead up to the race and the experience in the actual race itself was still pretty familiar, aside from the fact that there was no crowd, because it is oftentimes you're kind of in your own world prepping and things like that. But it was when I stepped back into the village, it's after midnight, I'm going to eat dinner alone,
yeah,
in the dining hall, that I was like, oh, this is really sad. And I was thankful my family was all together. And so I FaceTimed my husband and we just like talked for a little while I was eating the scraps of what was left for dinner. Cause they actually were switching over to breakfast at that point. Because some of the other events were starting so early, the athletes would start coming in at like 2 a.m. to eat breakfast.
Okay.
For the heat. So that was definitely like, I think the hardest part was then like, when I did accomplish this like huge life goal of mine and I didn't get to be with the people that I like love and care about.
So do you think about Paris much now, or is that too overwhelming? Are you just kind of focused on, you know, I mean, on one hand, it's a goal. It is a goal and you have to think about it, but on the other hand, it could also be too much of a goal and you've got to take little bites instead of, you know, big bites.
Yeah, it's little bites. Yeah. And I think that it's a balance in terms of like thinking about and even stating like, I want to be back in Paris and also recognizing that there are steps along the way to get to that place. And so, you know, because I basically did not steeple last year, I need to hit the Olympic standards still. So that's goal number one is like, let's get the Olympic time. And then, you know, goal number two, like be on the starting line of the Olympic trials, you know, confident and ready to go and, you know, and then so forth. And so, and I think that that's a good way to look at it because you never want to put the cart before the horse. So.
Do you have a job?
I don't. I've been really lucky that I've been able to focus full time on training since I left the NCAA. And I definitely feel really lucky in that sense that I've been supported. I'm on year 8 with Nike and I've been really, really fortunate to have them supporting me along the way.
You're 31 years old. Is that correct? Where is 31 at in the sport? What's kind of the peak age of the sport? Or is there there is no peak age.
No, I mean, I'm kind of in those years right now.
Okay.
You know, I think that for so long, I felt like it was going to be in my 20s, but particularly women are showing more and more that they can run very, very well into their 30s. You know, I also think that I have the benefit of my training age being a bit younger than maybe some, just because I didn't really train in high school. I was a very latecomer to the sport. And so, I think I'm right in a very good age to where I have a lot of years of experience to lean on.
Because I would say that you've aged out of gymnastics, but we'll see. Simone Biles may prove all of us wrong at this point, right?
Right. So, and I think you're saying the same thing with distance running too. And just a lot of sports. I think it's been cool, the conversation shifting to like, when we actually take care of our bodies and we can train at this level for a lot longer.
And I do honestly think that the U.S. has a huge advantage. American trained athletes have the huge advantage with the sports psychs and the mental health. I really think that could be something that really sets us apart. I know other countries are doing it as well, but I just feel like the advancement's been there.
I think that there's been a lot of really important conversations that have happened, particularly since 2021. But even in 2016, I was aware of the effects of the post-Olympics, like how hard it can be.
Yeah.
And just even knowing that that existed helped a lot.
Just the calm down, just the find, like you worked so hard for that full cycle and then it's over
and then
you got to start all over again.
Exactly. Yeah. What now? And so I think being aware of that and then also, continual work of finding identity outside of just whatever your sport is.
Where can people find you on social media? Do you post much?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. It's just my name, Courtney Frericks. And then I have a very infrequently posting-wise TikTok. But that one's probably not as known.
mostly all racing stuff, not like cooking recipes or anything like that?
Yeah, mostly stuff to do with running, occasional travel stuff. But a lot of photos of time spent in the mountains. So
what is that? And I don't want to go down a complete wormhole here, but what is your diet usually consist of? Is there something unique about runners? Is it calories or specific?
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly just making sure, yeah, you're getting enough in. And so, I mean, it's boring, but it's like a very balanced diet and pretty like bland in the mornings before we run, you know, peanut butter toast, oatmeal, things like that. And I'm still just a classic pasta eater the night before races. So tried and true.
I'm a pasta eater even without races. So
I mean, we have several nights a week in our household. So
thank you, Courtney. Of course, we'll continue to follow her journey as we move on closer and closer to the games in Paris. That'll do it for us here at Quest for Gold. I'm Ryan Burrow. We'll see you back here soon.